Well, we are continuing our teaching series of The Pursuit, and it's a study through the Minor Prophets. And we've been asking you to read through the Minor Prophets. And as you read through the Minor Prophets, we've told you that there's a filter that you need to be reading, or there's a perspective that you need to be reading with. And that first perspective is this, is that God pursues us from a heart of love because He desires a relationship with us. As well as this perspective is that God pursues us because He keeps His promises. He is a covenant keeping God, understanding that the Minor Prophets are written to the people of God, the children of God, and they have been in a covenant for hundreds of years, but have broken that covenant, and God has been faithful to the covenant by pursuing them. That's why we have this faithful God. And so we've asked you to finish reading Jonah for this week, and so you should have read Jonah's chapter 3 and 4, and then for next week, you need to read Nahum. That's for next week. You'll read that chapter. But today, as we look at Jonah, here's what we're going to see again here in this. That's the sovereignty of God. Remember this. The sovereignty of God is in absolute control, unrestricted in His supremacy. And we see that God is the God that is over land and sea, over what lives in the sea, over the plant life. We're going to see that today in what grows here, but also over mankind, over humans, over the climate. He's in control of all that. And then we also see this, mercy. Mercy shows up. And remember last week we said mercy is much more than just an emotion or a feeling. Mercy is compassion and love that's expressed in very tangible ways. And we're going to see all of that right here in this minor prophet, the book of Jonah. I also want us to wrestle with this question, or to have this thought in mind. And that is this. If our selfish anger keeps us from extending God's mercy, then we've missed the point of God's mercy. So just think about that for a second. If our selfish anger keeps us from extending God's mercy, then we've missed the point of God's mercy. And here's how I want to jump into this thought. Who gets you ticked off? Right? Just stop and think about that for a second. Who is it that just really ticks you off? You know, maybe it's the drivers, right? It's the driver who drives slow in the fast lane. It's like, why do you do that? It's a fast lane or a passing lane for a reason. And when you're driving below the speed limit there, that's not cool. You know, it just slows all of us down. We've got places to go, right? Why do you drive so slow? Maybe it's the driver that rides your bumper, right? Or in Rhode Island, we love to do this. We love to think we have the right-of-way when we're coming off of a side street, and we just pop right out. Oh, they'll stop. You know, my father-in-law, back in the day when I was in college, I went to college in Michigan, and my father-in-law came out, and I was like doing this little tour, and we ended, and he was with us. He was actually driving. Yeah, he's a native Rhode Islander. We were in Texas, and we were in Dallas, Texas, and I'll never forget this, man. I'm in the back seat, and my father-in-law thinks he can drive like Rhode Islanders do in Texas, and it doesn't work because he is like, you know how people just think you're going to stop and they pull out, you know, oh, they'll let me stop, I'll just edge out there. Man, I can't tell you how many times I saw the car coming, and I'm like, and I'm like leaning over waiting for the impact to come because, you know, Rhode Island drivers, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but maybe that just really ticks me off. A lot about driving this morning, isn't it? Hey, but maybe it's people with different political views. Boy, that just sets you off, man. And like on your social media platform, you're going to let them know how wrong they are. It's like, boom, 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 pow, take that. Which, let me just ask you this. How many people do you know have repented of their way because of a post they read on your Facebook or Instagram or something like that, right? I mean, that's a whole other argument, another thing. Maybe it's about people who have a different view of world values. They live life values. They live out a completely opposite of the way that God tells us to live our life. They make choices that we know that God doesn't honor, but it's those people, and some people, and I've heard some people, they're like, that is so disgusting. disgusting, and it's like this anger boils up inside of them when they look or see or think about some people with different views on values of life. And the list could go on. I mean, you answer the question within your own heart. Who gets you ticked off? But here's my next question. Who do you have a hard time showing mercy to? And my suggestion is, however you answered the first question, you'd answer this question the same way. You say, well, no, not when you put it like that. Well, yeah, really. Rick has a hard time having mercy on crazy drivers. I don't know why. Where is that coming from? I have been reflecting on that question for a long time. And it's still trying to get, I'm still trying to get that, surrender that area of my life. I'm trying to let the gospel transform that part of my life. But what is it for you? Who is it? What is it? Who is it that you have a hard time showing mercy to? I know for me, I was impacted young in life. In fact, I was in first grade, and it was the first time I was getting on the public school bus to go to school. And this is only probably in Modoc, Indiana, but first graders got on the same bus that high schoolers got onto. And so the bus is driving around, and it's picking up, and obviously it's out in the country. And so they're picking all of us up. And here I am getting on the bus with high schoolers. And I have been forever impacted by the first time that I rode that bus, because I'll never forget when the bus stopped in front of a house and another high school kid was getting on. And that when that high school kid stepped on that bus, all the other high school kids started making fun of him because his skin was a different color, because his ethnicity was different than theirs. In fact, different from everybody else's on the bus. And they were making jokes. And I remember as a first grader inside of me, something welling up saying, this isn't right. And today, we might say, those are bullies. And that carried with me in a bad way. Because then as I grew up, and as I came across what we would call bullies, then I thought it was my job to protect those kinds of people who were being picked on. And it led to foolishness. It led to, fights, which is stupid. That's not the way you handle that kind of stuff. That wasn't showing mercy. And I can remember, and we moved a lot. I always found out where my parents moved to, but we moved around a lot. And when I would go to a new school, somehow I would always end up with these guys who were picking on other guys. Or we'd move into a new neighborhood, and there was like the neighborhood bully. And everybody's like freaked out about him. And I always found myself in violent situations. And that carried with me. I have a hard time showing mercy to people who want to dominate others and show their power, which isn't good. And here in our story in Jonah in part 2, we're going to see that show up. In fact, where last week we left off with chapter 3 and the first two verses, remember this is like the best part. And then the Lord spoke to Jonah a second time. Remember that God is a God of second chances. He comes back. He has mercy. He extends mercy to us time and time again, even when we don't deserve it. And this time, the directive is still the same. God tells him to get up and go to the great city of Nineveh, the same city that he told him to go to the first time. Nothing has changed about that city. This city is still the Assyrian people. This is still those violent people. This is still that people group. In fact, I was thinking about this week. I think it would be safe to say that if in your mind, when you think of the Assyrians, you could think of ISIS. Because that was the type of moral values that they had. That's the type of value that they had on human life. And Jonah was told to go there. and deliver this message. And notice this, he does. He goes there and he finally gets there. Remember, it was like 500 miles away. He finally gets there. And when he gets there, he shouts to the crowd, and here's the message that he shouts to them. He says, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's almost laughable. In the Hebrew, it was five words. He doesn't tell, I mean, just stop and think about this. He doesn't tell them who this is from. He doesn't tell them, you know, what to, why destruction is coming. He doesn't tell them to repent. He doesn't tell them anything. He's just like, you are going to be destroyed. God's judgment is going to come down upon you. Now, the unbelievable thing that even when our heart isn't right, that God can still use what he wants to have happen, his sovereignty. So here's what happened on this five Hebrew message. The people of Nineveh believed God's message from the greatest to the least. And they declared a fast and put on burlap to show their sorrow. In fact, the king, the leader of ISIS, if you will, he tells all the people, he makes a decree, and here's his decree. His decree is that people and animals alike must wear garments of mourning, and everyone must pray earnestly to God. Not to all the different idols that they were worshiping before. Now the king is telling everybody to turn your focus to God, the Hebrew God, Yahweh. They must turn from their evil ways. He's saying, we have to repent. Turn, that's all that repent means. Sometimes people think repent's like this bad word or something. It's not a bad word. It means change your mind. Change what you're doing. That's what he's telling them. We've got to repent. They must turn from their evil ways. The king acknowledges their evil ways and stop their violence. That's what the king, and why? Why does he want this? Because the king goes on to say, perhaps even yet God will change his mind and hold back his fierce anger from destroying us. This king is holding out hope that God will have mercy upon them. And do you know what happens? In verse 10, it tells us exactly what happens. And when God saw what they had done and how they had put a stop, they stopped their evil ways. He, God, changed his mind. Mercy shows up. God shows up and has mercy on these people. This is the gospel. This is what God does. God shows up and has mercy on us. And it doesn't matter if you have committed the most, you know, vile crime, or if you've lived the most moral life. We all are on the same playing field when it comes to needing God's mercy. And I know that there are people in here, and we know that Jonah feels like this, that he's a little bit better than these Assyrians, these people who live in the city of Nineveh. He feels like, you know, I've been doing the right thing. You know, I worship the right God. I have the right political views. I have, and you know, and the list could go on, and he thinks he is, honestly, he just thinks he's a little bit better than that. And so, the gospel shows up, the gospel, God's mercy overtakes, and God did not carry out the destruction that he had threatened. Remember my question about what gets you ticked off? What gets you, what just like makes you angry? You know, I told you I was impacted in first grade, and it wasn't until my adult life that I understood the depth of that. How it was really hard for me to have mercy on certain types of people. And as you know, maybe you don't know, so I'm going to say this. Don't forget that I wasn't just the youth pastor here at CCF. I was also a youth pastor at a church in Michigan. But one day I got a phone call. And it was from a family who said that that one of the parents had gotten into an altercation with their child, physically. And the parent was the one that was at fault. And immediately inside of me bubbled up, I'm going to go over there and I dare him to hit me. That was inside of me. And I'm driving over there and I'm thinking exactly where I'm going to clock him, exactly how I'm going to hit him. That's all inside of me. And I get into that living room, and we are sitting on a couch. And God broke my heart for that dad. And by the our time being done, I was able to really cry with that father. And I actually hugged the very person that I wanted to just beat the crap out of. That's God's mercy. And that when I left there, I was just bawling. Because I was like, God, thank you for giving me mercy, for helping me to love somebody that I could never love on my own. That's what happens when our anger collides with God's mercy. What gets you ticked off? This is what got Jonah ticked off. This change of plans, God's mercy on people who Jonah didn't think deserved it, that change of plans greatly upset Jonah, and he became very angry. Does it make you angry when you see people receive something or get something that you feel like that they don't deserve? Does it make you angry when you see mercy extended to somebody and you're like, you don't deserve mercy? Does that make you angry? It did Jonah. And here's another thought. Isn't this true? We're more worried about being right than doing right. See, God has called us to just have mercy. God called us to have mercy, to show mercy, to do good. And so many times we're more worried about getting it right, making sure that we have our argument right. We want to win the argument instead of just doing what's right. What? And that's where Jonah's at. This change of plans greatly upset Jonah, and he became very angry, and so he complained to the Lord about it. Didn't I tell you before I left home that you would do this, Lord? I mean, this is the very guy that received mercy himself from God on multiple occasions, but the biggest one that we know that he received mercy from was when he was in the sea and God had mercy on him and rescued him. And this very guy is complaining. He's mad. In fact, now we understand why chapter 4 tells us why chapter 1 happened. It says, Jonah says, that is why I ran away to Tarshish. I knew that you were a merciful and a compassionate God, slow to get angry, filled with unfailing love. You are eager to turn your back from destroying people. That's, he knew this from the very, this was ingrained in him. You know why it was ingrained in him? Is because Exodus chapter 34, in the very beginning, when the people of God first entered into a covenant, God showed up and God says, Moses, I am Yahweh. I'm the Lord. I'm the God of compassion and mercy. I am slow to anger and filled with unfailing love and faithfulness. Jonah knew the character of God, and he did not want those wicked people to receive God's mercy. And so he was going to run totally the different way, because he knew in his heart if he showed up and he preached the mercy of God, that those people would repent. Who is it that that's your work that you don't want them to know about God? You're like, they're too, they would, one, you're in your mind, you think they would never listen. You think they would never hear you because of the way that they're living their life. But have you extended mercy to them? Have you told them about God's mercy? Not about what they're doing wrong. That's for God to bring, to work in their heart. What we are called to do is to plant seed. What we are called to do is to water the seed and to see what God does and how he grows it. And so our story goes on. This is Jonah. Jonah's like, just kill me now. I'd rather be dead than alive. And I know this isn't very spiritual, but all week long, I could not get Bon Jovi's song out of my head. I'm dead than alive, or whatever, however that goes. Riding a horse. I'm a cowboy. That's what it is. I'm a cowboy. Every time I read that verse, I'm like, oh, why is this coming in my head? I'm not even into music. I'm not even into Bon Jovi, but that just came in my head. So, He's like, I'd rather be dead than alive if what I predicted won't happen. You see the pride? You see the pride there? That's where we get. We'd rather be right than to do what's right. That's what we're worried about. And a lot of people who call them Christ, who call themselves Christ followers, haven't allowed the mercy of God to really transform every area of our life, our views, the way that we look at people. But here's what I love this, that God, in His mercy, I mean, if this was me, if I was God, I would have been like, you know, I would have, you know, grabbed Jonah, threw him back into the sea and said, you want your mercy? Go back to the sea, you know? No, what God does is He comes back with a question. Is it right for you to be angry about this? And then, what is amazing is that Jonah takes that question and he goes outside of the city and it says, and then Jonah went outside of out to the east side of the city and he made a shelter to sit under. So again, this is part of their culture. We don't understand that, but think, you know, in our culture, we're going to pop up one of those canopies, right? That's what he's doing. He's popping up a shelter and he sits under there and he waited to see what would happen to the city, because inside of him, he is still hoping that God's judgment's going to come down upon that city and God is going to wipe those people out because he can't stand them even still. And then, what we didn't read is that while he's sitting underneath that shelter, that this leafy plant grows up out of nowhere. This leafy plant grows up and it provides even more shade from this sun that is just beaming down on him. And now Moses is like, yeah. It's kind of like the you're sitting in the sun and now you've got a beach umbrella and the breeze is blowing on you and it's nice and cool out there, right? This eased his discomfort. And Jonah was very grateful for the plant. Now notice that it's all about Jonah. It's all about his comfort. It's all about him. How many times is it us? We're not wanting to show mercy because it's about our discomfort. You want me to talk to who? But God, do you know? You know, maybe you're even holding on to that bag of seeds. You've got it there and you're getting up in the morning and you're like, God, show me that one today that you want me to demonstrate your love to. And then God's like whispering in your ear when you're standing in the line at Dunkin' for your coffee and there's that guy in front of you and he's like, hey, give him one of those cards that says you matter. Just tell him, hey, you matter. You matter to God. And walk away. And you're like, dude, I can't do that, God. I can't show mercy to them. You know, and you're arguing because that's out of your comfort zone. You know, you don't do, we're New Englanders. We don't talk to strangers. You know, they do that in the South, but not up here. You know, that's what we're thinking. Then God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry because the plant died? And Jonah's response back to him is yes. Jonah retorted, even angry enough to die. Someone, oh, it was Maggie. Maggie came into my office this week and said, can you believe what a brat Jonah is? I mean, I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't have thought that way, but I see it. Yeah, definitely. Isn't that true, though? It's like, what is going on with this guy? Now, verse 10. And then the Lord said, you feel sorry about the plant. Now stop and think about this. He had more grief. He had more grieving over a plant. Though you did nothing to put it there. He didn't do anything to bring it there. God's mercy, it sprung up. God's mercy, it provided shade. And within 24 hours, actually the next day, it was like shriveling. Because God sent a worm, again the sovereignty of God, sent a worm to destroy the plant. And the plant withers away. And though you, and he's grieving about this, he's upset about this. He says, you're sorry about this plant life, though you did nothing to put it there. It came up quickly and died quickly. And God's response, but Nineveh has more than 120,000 people living in spiritual darkness. Jonah was more worried about plant life than he was about the eternal value of a person. You know, there's 179,000 people in Providence, just Providence alone. 179,000. What we know statistically is that less than 2% of people go, less than 2% of people are Christ followers in the state of Rhode Island. I mean, in round numbers, what is that? Like 178, let's say it's 180,000, we'll say 178,000 people don't know Jesus, just in the city of Providence. Right here in our own city, in Cranston, there's 80,000 people, I think, in round numbers, 80,000 people in the city of Cranston. There's 80,000 people in the city of Warwick. There's 35,000 people in Coventry. There's 29,000 people in West Warwick. There's 26,000 people in North Kingstown. Less than 2% of them know Jesus. There's 33,000 people in Cumberland, 21,000 people in Lincoln. And do we care more about our own comfort? Stop and think about this. Do we care about more about our own comfort than we do of what it's going to take to reach all these people? I mean, in one sense, it's good for us because that means if we were a business, man, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that need what we have to tell them. We're not a business. We're something that's much more important. But the field, Jesus said it this way, the field, it's ready to be harvested. But there's not very many people who's willing to pray on a daily basis, God, show me that one person, and then take the next step. You know what one person is doing? One person is taking that bag of seeds. And what they're doing with this bag of seeds, when they wake up in the morning, they put it where they could see that. And then they went and got a separate bag. And they put this is just genius. They put a separate bag next to it. And every time that they share their full story with somebody, they come home and they take out one of the seeds in this bag and they put it in the empty bag to remind them how many times have they actually shared their whole story. Not just demonstrate God's love to somebody. I'm talking they're like sharing their whole gospel story with somebody. That is so awesome. That's so cool. And that's what God is doing here among us. And that is God's mercy. Let's be a church. Let's be a church that lives out God's mercy. Here's the way Jesus put it in Matthew 5. He says, "But I say to you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. And in that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven." Church, that's what we want to be. That's what we desire to be here. That's our hope and prayer. We're praying that Mayor Fung sees a church that's just not focused about about an address on the corner, but that we're focused on just loving the city. That we're focused on loving the children. We want to help bring up the education at Stadium School. We want those kids to have a great opportunity, to have a great education and be resourced the way that they need to be resourced. And many of you are volunteering at that school. During reading week, did you know that they called me up and said, "Rick, we can't handle any more volunteers. You call them off." That's awesome because of you guys wanting to extend mercy and grace to these kids and go and read to them. That's what God does when His people live in this way. And Jesus said, when you do that, then you're living out. You're truly my children. And this morning, this table is another symbol of God's mercy on our life and in our life. This we call this communion, and it's because we get to commune. It's a reminder of who God is in our life. And this morning, in just a minute, we're going to enter into communion. But before we do that, will you take out your connection card? Because I'm hoping that you'll make one of these your prayers. On your connection card, maybe the next step for you is, in Jonah's story, I see my story, and I need God to transform my heart so I can live a life of mercy. Pray that God will give me a heart of mercy for my enemies. Whatever you see as your enemy, whomever you see as your enemy, whatever view or whatever rubs you the wrong way, that person at work, that person that lives in your neighborhood, whatever, will you pray that God will give you a heart that he will allow the gospel to transform you in this area of having mercy? But maybe you're here this morning and you're like, I've never surrendered my life to the God of mercy. And for the first time, I invite God into my life and put my faith and trust in Him. And if that is you this morning, then we're asking you to put your name and your phone number on that connection card. Give it to somebody at welcome, in the welcome, in the guest services, or drop it in the offering boxes, because we do want to follow up with you. We have a Bible we want to give you. We have other information that we want to give you. And we just want to pray with you and just celebrate the beginning. That because inviting Jesus into your life for the first time is just the beginning. It's about growing in that. And that's why, you know, so many of us are gathered, is because we need to grow in that. And so this morning, this table is far for those people who have experienced God's mercy and acknowledged it and invited Him into their life. And we always say this. We always want people to realize that receiving communion may not be the best choice for you this morning, because if you have something between you and God, you might want to just like hold off or pause. Or here's how we do it here. When we pass the plate, the deacons are going to come in a moment, and they've enlisted some helpers to help them to serve all this. And when they come, and you're served, we're going to ask you to hold on to your bread. And when they do the cup, we're going to ask you to hold on to your cup, because we all want to partake together. But when you're holding that bread, that's your time to make sure that you and God are right. But also, you need to ask the question, am I right horizontally? Is everything okay with the people in my family, with other Christ followers? Am I harboring bitterness in my heart against somebody? And if there is, you have an opportunity to make that right. And then we would invite you to be a part of communion, part of taking with us. But if you're like, yeah, I'm not ready for that, then maybe you need to just observe and just pray through this. And everybody in the room's at a different place, and it's okay. Some people will partake, some people won't. We just ask you to use that time to reflect and see where you are. So we'll ask the deacons to come. Andrew, one of our elders, is going to come and help me serve this morning.